Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we will be speaking with Marcela Diaz of Somos Un Pueblo Unido and David Urias, attorney, about issues relating to the special session. Right now, I'd like to welcome Peter Wirth. He is New Mexico State Senator from District 25. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning.
Good morning. So special session is the agenda item of the moment. What is the special session? It starts today. It starts this afternoon.
It does. We will swear in at noon, and the real reason we are back is constitutional. Every 10 years, the state needs to redistrict. Basically, the three congressional districts up north in Albuquerque and down south are how they're currently drawn. The state legislative districts, both state Senate, state House, the Public Regulation Commission, and the Public Education Commission. The reason for this is to ensure equal representation by constituents, by voters, by individuals living in specific areas. We have had in New Mexico over the last 10 years a 13% growth in population.
Okay.
And what's fascinating is that growth is not by any means equal. It's in very select portions of the state. Actually, Santa Fe County, interestingly, has not grown 13%. We've only grown 11%, so we're a little bit short, which means that our districts, our legislative districts in particular, are going to need to grow a little bit to address that.
Where are the fastest growing districts?
Well, what's interesting, there's only, of the 33 counties in New Mexico, only six have grown more than 13%. Lee County, down southeast, Hobbs, has grown 16.6%.
Really? Based on what?
Well, oil and gas, certainly,
okay.
And the uranium enrichment facility, I think, has resulted in growth there. Doña Ana County has grown 19%. Valencia County, south of Albuquerque, has grown 15%. Bernalillo itself has grown 19%. San Juan County has grown 14%. And then the final one, which is the big kind of elephant under the tent here, is Sandoval County, which has grown 46.3% since 2000. That's Rio Rancho.
Okay.
And so
is because of Rio Rancho.
Absolutely. There's been...
Because there's so much construction there.
That's right. That's where the growth has occurred. And what we've seen is those six counties are where we've had population increases. The eastern part of the state, the southwestern part of the state have had significant population losses. For example, Hidalgo County in the Boot Heel has lost 17%. So the state grew 13%, Hidalgo lost 17%, and you can see that their representation, they don't have enough individuals there for each representative in these various bodies. So our job is to come in and basically conform to the principle of one man, or as I like to say, one person, one vote, to ensure that everyone has fair representation.
So this is really the process of democracy at work, redistricting. Now, redistricting is notorious for gerrymandering. I mean, I remember once seeing a documentary, I believe it was about Tom DeLay, and about how the city, they were trying to not let the city of Austin be a Democratic district, so they divided it into four pieces. It was insane. I mean, how do you redistrict in a way that prevents that kind of abuse? I mean, it's ripe for political manipulation.
It's true, and you know, there's been a lot of discussion about having a nonpartisan redistricting commission, which many states are going to. California has gone to that to take this process out of the political process. I haven't been through redistricting before, and so I've kind of taken a position, a wait-and-see attitude, because you're right, the political process is extraordinary, and it goes down to every individual member. I've been very surprised to sit around the table with a group of legislators who normally are allies and watching each of them look at their own specific district and what's changing, what's going to change, what does it mean if I move this precinct here, this precinct there. There are some principles of redistricting that are legal principles that I think address those outrageous districts where you have a 100-mile-long district that just kind of narrowly weaves along an interstate.
Yeah, right.
Or some of those things in Texas. Districts have to be generally compact, meaning that you can't kind of create a long, strange-looking district and kind of stretch something out.
Yeah, with a lollipop on the end.
Sure, sure. And they need to be contiguous, so you can't have a jump that's got to connect. And then I think that one of the key things is communities of interest and minorities have specific constitutionally protected rights. So you can't take a Navajo precinct and dilute it in such a way that you take away their ability to elect representation.
Right.
And so the backstop to all this, and this is a really important point that people should understand, if we don't get our job done and do this in the legislature, it ends up in court. And 10 years ago, the congressional plan, the state house plan, and the Public Regulation Commission ended up in court, and a district judge in Albuquerque, Judge Allen, ended up drawing the maps. And I just think, as you say, this is a truly, it's democracy really at its best, and we are the elected representatives of the people, and so it's incumbent upon us to avoid letting this break down and end up in court where, 10 years ago, it cost $3.5 million in legal fees.
Oh
so
boy.
The lawyers all made out, and you know the judge ends up doing the least possible because, of course, the judge feels uncomfortable, as you might imagine, trying to do this democratic process. So one of the things about all these other issues that have been brought up for the special session that really, in my opinion, is the best argument for not kind of getting ourselves distracted is that we have to get this job done so that it doesn't end up in court and try to put something together that the governor will sign.
So it's not an easy job. I mean, it's not just looking at the populations. I mean, I'm visualizing the state with graphic dots on it that show the population in each of those areas and then just kind of drawing dotted lines around each of those areas. It's not that simple?
It's not that simple. I'll give you a perfect local example. So Senate District 25 and House District 47, which I used to represent in the House and Brian Egoff now represents, for the last number of years, we've represented the El Dorado area. There are a number of plans that have the El Dorado area switching Senate districts, going into Senate District 39, currently represented by Senator Phil Griego. And El Dorado 10 years ago was moved into PRC District 4, which is different from Santa Fe's PRC District 3. It's the district that includes the Navajo Nation and the South Valley. And so constituents in El Dorado feel that they really don't have a voice on the PRC, and they really want to get back into the Santa Fe PRC district because they feel like they are a community that's really part of the Santa Fe community. And so we've had some town halls this week and lots of feedback from El Dorado saying, you know, we don't want to move into a separate, more rural district. We want to be part of the Santa Fe district. So you're right. It gets down to the specific precincts at that level.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So do the vote? I mean, you're having these town hall meetings. Do the voters have anything to really say about it?
Well, they do. And what was very encouraging, we met Tuesday night out in El Dorado, and then Wednesday I've served on the interim redistricting committee. And we had the final hearing in Santa Fe, and a number of El Dorado citizens came and were able to testify during the public comment portion about the specific interests of their community and why it made sense not to draw them or move them into a different district. And I just encourage, as we go into this session, there's going to be a lot of times when we're kind of back in caucus, each individual area moving maps, trying to make it work. But each bill has to go through the process, and it will be heard in committees. And I know in the Senate Rules Committee that I serve on, and the Senate Judiciary Committee that I also am vice chair of, are going to hear these bills. And I really encourage folks to come down and see what's happening.
Now, when you say bills, is each redistricting map a bill?
It is, and this is what's interesting. So the little situation with El Dorado, that needs to be addressed in the overall bill, for example, for the state Senate. There will be one bill that's going to have a plan, and if it doesn't address El Dorado, then I'm going to need to try and... You can't amend the bill is what I'm told, so we'll need to introduce a different version of the final bill. So, yes, there's going to be bills for the U.S. Congress, for the state Senate, for the state House, for the PRC, and the Public Education Commission.
Goodness. Yeah, I remember once there's a website somewhere in one of the New Mexican one of the New Mexican websites that basically you can Google, what district am I in? And it's really confusing because it's like, okay, federal congressional, state senate, school board, PRC. And so it's one of those things. I mean, there are issues that are easier for citizens to wrap their heads around than this. Are there, for example, lobbyists who have any interest in this kind of thing? Are there people pressuring legislators?
Good question. We did have testimony from some folks who represent AARP who said they're going to be very clearly following this. I can guarantee you that our current sitting congressmen are going to be extremely interested in the congressional plans, which, as you might imagine, the district in Albuquerque, the first district, when Patricia Madrid ran against Heather Wilson, she lost by 900 votes. Well, 900 right. votes basically is one or two precincts. And so that's always been a very close district, and it has a slight population increase that needs to be adjusted. And so I think you're going to see folks representing, certainly the political parties will be involved in trying to figure out, okay, how can we draw this so that it benefits Republicans? How can we draw this so that it benefits Democrats? And then within the parties, there are Tea Party Republicans and moderate Republicans, and likewise in the Democrats, people looking at all this for different reasons. So I think those influences will be there. We won't have kind of the same corporate lobbyists that we see often at the legislature. But, one thing I do want to point out, you mentioned information available on the web. I really encourage folks to go to the legislature's webpage, because currently there are all the plans that we have discussed during the redistricting committee, and you can pull those up and dial them right down to your specific street to see exactly what's happening and where you're moving. And then as the bills get introduced, they'll also be posted there. So that's a good way to kind of follow the process without actually sitting in the chair over at the roundhouse.
We're talking to State Senator Peter Wirth about the special session, which starts this afternoon. Now, is there any chance that with New Mexico's population growth, we'll have a fourth U.S. congressperson?
No, we did not grow enough this time around to do that. Again, the 13% growth was not sufficient, so it's the same three seats, but with the congressional seats, we have to actually make all three equal. And so the seat up north has grown a little bit because of Rio Rancho. The southern seat's short about 22,000 voters. So we're going to need to move some precincts around to make that work.
Oh, my goodness. So this could take... Now, how long is the special session?
Well, that's a great question. There's no defined term other than it has to end within 30 days. So now the governor certainly at the end of 30 days could call another one and bring us back. But again, 10 years ago, when redistricting was done, and there were, let me just say, no other issues except redistricting, my understanding it took about 2 weeks to get that done.
Oh, okay. So it's not necessarily going to drag on and on and on, unless there are battles.
Well, and this is one of the big issues because the governor has the prerogative under the Constitution to add additional issues to the agenda. And she has done that, and she has discussed that she is going to add up to 10 different additional issues, which she thinks we can consider kind of during the downtime in the session.
Now, we're going to talk to Marcela Diaz in a little bit about the driver, that ubiquitous driver's license issue that seems to never go away, even though it's not that big an issue, but in my view. Anyway, what are some of the others?
Well, there's a bill that deals with social promotion, holding kids who can't read at third grade back a year. There is a capital outlay bill, the PORC, as it's called, for bricks and mortar projects. It died on the floor of the Senate in January, and during the January session, right at the end. And then there's there's a bill on fireworks. We had the fires, and that sounds like a no-brainer, but it is going to be very contested, and that's one where we will have lobbyists representing the mom-and-pop fireworks shops.
Right.
And so that's one. There's a bill that I think is of interest to folks here in Santa Fe, the proposed consolidation of the Department of Cultural Affairs and Tourism, something that was pushed during the session, did not pass, and the governor's talked about bringing that back. There is an issue with unemployment. We passed a bill to increase the employer's contribution to the unemployment fund that passed the legislature. And then the governor, it was supported by business, the Association of Commerce and Industry. The governor didn't just outright veto the bill. She tried to line item veto a tax bill. It went to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court didn't decide the issue, but basically said, well, the legislature can come back and resolve the issue. So that's one that's kind of in limbo that we could also address. So, and then there's a food stamp issue that can be fixed. And some things I think that we can do if there's agreement. With special sessions, the lesson is that you really need to have consensus going in. The example that I think Steve Terrell, the New Mexican, highlighted just this week was in 2003, Governor Richardson called a special session to deal with tax reform and brought all the legislators here. The bill basically that was introduced was hundreds of pages, 180 pages, I believe, and was dead on arrival. And during that session, that bill went nowhere, but the governor introduced the GRIP bill, the infrastructure bill for roads and highways, which included the little language that allowed the rail runner. So, you know, it's a good example because things can happen in special sessions. The governor's got the prerogative at any time to add additional items, to give us a message, to consider additional items. So,
now, of the extra items that you just mentioned, which of them, if any, do you think really are so urgent that they just can't wait till January?
Great question. I personally, let me just say, think that we should come in and do the redistricting bills and do nothing else until we have passed those bills and sent them up to the governor. What happens is the governor then has 3 days to sign or veto those bills, and my guess is the legislature will remain in session while she does that. During those 3 days, I think we should focus on bills that involve jobs and the economy. The capital outlay bill is kind of our own mini stimulus. I mean, these are construction projects and construction jobs. If we can reach agreement, I think we should do that. Senator Tim Keller from Albuquerque has a bill that deals with a preference for New Mexico businesses in terms of the bidding process, and that's one that I think can help New Mexico businesses compete. And I think that it passed unanimously. The governor vetoed it during the last session. She said there were some tweaks that need to be made. If there's still agreement on that language, then that's the type of bill we should consider. But these other bills, certainly the driver's license issue, initially the governor had said after the session that she was not going to bring that in the special session, but changed her mind. She certainly has the prerogative to ask us to consider it. I think we have the prerogative, just so folks understand, the legislature controls its own agenda. So we have the prerogative to decide whether we're going to hear that bill.
And okay. So the governor can say, I want you to hear A, B, C, and D, and you say, we're not going to hear any of them. We're going to hear A and D.
Correct. I mean, the bills have to be, what'll happen, there's a process to determine whether or not they're germane within the governor's message, and then they get referred to committees. And I just think that my general sense is that there's agreement, bipartisan, let me say, that we've got to get this job done on redistricting. And I just, again, when you put, just think about it, if you put capital outlay, which is a very political process, it just increases the potential that, well, you know, Representative so-and-so, if you'll, you know, vote for this little capital outlay project, then I'll vote to give you this little precinct in your district. That kind of horse trading.
Ooh, right.
And so...
And you don't want that.
No. I just think it distracts, and it's already tough enough. The House, Representative Egoff, at our town hall last night basically said, even though there are 37 Democrats, 34 Republicans, one independent, maybe it's 33 Republicans, one independent, it's basically 35-35. Because of the way certain members are voting.
Right.
So when it's that close, and given the scope of the job we have to do to get the people's work done so that they have fair representation, I just think that needs to be
front and center.
To be the focus, yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe this is naive, but when it's really half and half like that, isn't that a... doesn't that make for... a more likelihood of a fair redistricting?
Well, it's a good point. I think what it means, and again, I think also because we have split government. We have Democrats controlling the House and Senate and the governor up on the fourth floor. If the Democrats pass a plan that is wildly political, favoring them, we're almost guaranteed the governor's going to veto it.
Right.
I think what has to happen is that we need to sit down with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle and really try and do this in a way that's fair, that creates districts that aren't, you know, ridiculous, stretching halfway across the state so that the east side can still have a representative. You know, you've got a district that comes over into Albuquerque.
Do we have some of those now?
Well, we have a few pretty interesting districts. Senator Phil Griego currently has a district that goes from Los Alamos, and it makes a horseshoe all the way around the bottom of Santa Fe, then back up into San Miguel, Mora, and Taos County. So, again, that can happen, and I just think that I remain hopeful that we can get this done, quite frankly, because of, certainly in the Senate, the ability that we have to work Democrats and Republicans, and that's what it's going to take.
Now, all these other issues that you mentioned, besides redistricting, if they don't come up now, September, they'll come up again in January. Is that correct, during the regular legislative session?
Absolutely. It's the governor's call in January. It's a 30-day session, so it means that we deal with the budget and items that she wants to place on the agenda. So I really think that is the proper place for most of these items.
It's a 30-day session coming up.
In January.
In January, which means it's usually supposed to be about the budget mainly.
That's right, the budget. But the governor, again, has the prerogative to add items to the call. And so, again, that's the perfect place to do this. We need to focus on redistricting, and I think that's what's going to happen. But, you know, stay tuned, because it can get... can get wild and furious there if we start having bills blasted around out of committees and things of that nature. So,
well, we will keep up to date on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe and also on KSFR News, no doubt. Peter Wirth is New Mexico State Senator from District 25. Thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
I'm very happy now to welcome to the program David Urias. He is an attorney with Friedman Boyd, and he is here to talk about immigrant driver's licenses. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much.
And Marcela Diaz, who's the executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido, who's talking about the same thing as well as the special session. Welcome, Marcela.
Thanks for having us, Mary Charlotte.
So, David, talk for a moment. This whole issue of immigrant driver's licenses, New Mexico is one of the few states in the United States that offers licenses to, I mean, I guess you would say undocumented immigrants in the official sense, but they have documents proving their residency, proving the countries that they come from, and so on. You brought a suit against the Secretary of Taxation and Revenue. What was that all about?
Well, the suit brought by our firm and the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, which is a national civil rights organization, is really directed at the program that the Motor Vehicle Department and the Executive Department have created, which targets people primarily people who were born outside the United States, and requires them, commands them to come before the MVD and re-show all the documents that they already showed when they first applied for the licenses under the guise of this, you know, investigation of fraud, which doesn't make sense because the MVD, neither the MVD nor the executive branch has any information whatsoever or any rational basis to believe that any of the people who are being, you know, ordered to come before the MVD did anything wrong when they applied for their driver's licenses. They're entitled to the driver's licenses. They resided in New Mexico. They proved that to be the case. And for the MVD to then say, well, you know, because we don't agree with the legislature here that these people should even be receiving driver's licenses, we're going to make it as hard as possible for them to maintain them, and we're going to order them to come before the department. We think that's unconstitutional. We think that that's un-American. We think it's un-New Mexican. We think it's contrary to the rule of law. And that's why we filed this lawsuit. It's not really about the policy around the driver's license or the issuance of the driver's licenses. We think that's up to the legislature, and we hope that, you know, it ends up a certain way. But that's not really what this lawsuit's about. This lawsuit is broader in scope, and then it really goes to, you know, the authority of the government or one government agency to reach out, target a particular class of people. We don't think it can do that, and hopefully we'll have a permanent end to the program very soon.
Now, you did achieve a temporary restraining order, so they basically agreed with the argument that a judge agreed with the argument that you just made.
Well, I think the judge agreed with the argument that it needed to be halted temporarily because of the injury, the constitutional injuries that are occurring here. Now, the judge will later address the issues more carefully, but we feel confident that once she does that, she's going to strike the program down permanently because there is no authority for this program to be created. They created this program at their whim with no input from the legislature, no rulemaking whatsoever. They didn't go and have public comment and notice and things that are required by law. It's something that is quite remarkable. I've never seen anything like this where an agency takes it upon themselves to create something that runs contrary to the spirit of the policy that's set forth by the legislature.
Describe to us what actually happened, or maybe Marcella, you can do this. In other words, people started getting letters. What did these letters say?
These letters were sent, apparently, to 10,000 individuals who are a part of the quote-unquote foreign national database, which includes people who are unauthorized to live in the United States but who are legal residents of the state of New Mexico, people who have since getting their licenses naturalized and have become U.S. citizens or legal permanent residents, and U.S. citizens who chose not to use their Social Security number. So it's a very broad database, which is why we, you know, one of the plaintiffs in this case is a person who is actually a legal permanent resident who received this letter. And it basically said either you show up to Albuquerque, you make an appointment, you show up to Albuquerque in 30 days and reapply for a license, basically, not just providing your residency documents, but also providing once again all of these identity documents that you've already provided. And if you don't comply with this, then your license will be canceled. That's what our community, those were the letters that we were getting. We're very happy that this temporary restraining order is now in place because cancellations were supposed to begin this week. And so it came in perfect time to help stop some of these cancellations. And there's several members and family members of Somos who have come in and said, you know, I already got a letter saying that my license was going to be canceled because I couldn't make it. Now, lots of folks couldn't get to Albuquerque. Lots of folks couldn't comply with this program, Mary Charlotte, because
I was going to say, it's a big state.
It's a big state. And you know, initially, when the program was initiated, and everybody heard about it for the first time via a press release that the governor put out through her spokesperson, and people were very confused. How are we going to get to Albuquerque? And really, the stories of folks who couldn't comply, who asked for special accommodations from the governor and from the MVD and who were denied those special accommodations, range from folks who had surgery who couldn't make the 5-hour trip from Levington to Albuquerque to people here in Santa Fe. One older woman, for instance, said, "I don't drive over 35 miles an hour. I got my license and my old beat-up car to get me around Santa Fe. I don't drive on the freeway. There's no way that I'm going to be able to get to Albuquerque." And so these are folks who were told by MVD, well, if you can't make it, your license is going to be canceled, and maybe in the future you can reapply at your home MVD. But we know that for foreign nationals without social security numbers, that can be quite a tedious and cumbersome process. Just to get an appointment to provide your documents again and reapply can take up to 3 months.
Well, I mean, that's the other part of it. People were struggling to get appointments or even to get through on the telephone line.
That's correct. And, I mean, as David says, I mean, these are folks who've already complied with the law. We call this program the Show Me Your Papers Again Reverification Program.
So, David Urias, what is the next step?
Well, the next step is to have the hearing, which is set for the 13th, have an injunction in place until the court can address all the issues that are being raised here, and hopefully have a permanent, strike down the law permanently, the program permanently, and make clear to the executive and to the Motor Vehicle Department that this is beyond their authority, and they're not to engage in types of policy making and lawmaking activities that go contrary to the legislature's intent.
Now, what was the relationship between the governor's intention and the actions of the Motor Vehicles Division, David Urias?
Well, it's the Motor Vehicle Division is technically they're the ones that technically sent out the letters to the 10,000. But it's clear from the governor's statements and from the press releases from her spokesperson that this was a directive by the governor. This program must have been implemented, created within the executive branch at the direction of the governor, or at least at the direction of the Secretary of Taxation and Revenue. But it was the MVD that actually is implementing the program and going forward with this program. And so they're all kind of tied together. But we've filed a lawsuit against the Secretary of Taxation and Revenue because she's the person responsible for making sure that the department and the MVD follow the law. You know, this program is, again, something that we've never seen before. I was I worked for the Mexican-American Legal Defense Fund for many years and addressed a lot of anti-immigrant ordinances and other unconstitutional programs and initiatives in places in the South and in Texas and Arizona. And even in those places, which have kind of a reputation for being very anti-immigrant, very xenophobic, even in places like that, I had never seen a program like this that was done by one agency kind of on the spot, shoddily put together and targets on its face a class of individuals whom the legislature has already decided are entitled to these driver's licenses.
So that's why MALDEF, which is the Latino Legal Voice civil rights group, got involved in this.
That's right. MALDEF is absolutely right. You know, this New Mexico is not Texas. It's not Arizona. It's a unique state, as you pointed out. It's one of those states that has provided, I think, better policies regarding driver's license issuances than most states. And that's actually a good thing. It's not something that people should look at and say, well, we need to follow the majority of the states. I think we should be proud of the fact that we protect all residents of New Mexico. MALDEF thinks that that's a great thing about New Mexico, one of the great policy decisions that New Mexico has made and stood up to the kind of anti-immigrant rhetoric. And we hope that we maintain this state and in the way that it is, and that is a state that looks upon all people equally and does not single out a particular class of individuals for this kind of discriminatory treatment.
David Urias, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So, Marcela Diaz, Somos un Pueblo Unido, what have you been hearing from your members and your constituents about this issue?
Well, obviously people want to continue to be able to drive legally, be able to keep their insurance, register their vehicles, and be able to feel safe enough to interact with police, and having a form of identification and having a record that they can present to any police officer is actually something that our community wants to be able to do, because, of course, the majority of our community are not criminals and are following the law and abiding by the law. And so having a driver's license is really key in those kinds of interaction with law enforcement. And so folks are very concerned about this continued obsession with driver's licenses. I think it's important for your listeners to know that we're talking about fewer than 5% of driver's license holders across the board. So it's a lot of money, it's a lot of attention, it's a lot of political capital being placed on such a small percentage. And we know that, you know, our tax and rev department and our MVD should be focused on the majority of drivers in the state and in making it a better system for all of us, and instead of really focusing on this real small percentage of folks. This re-verification program as David had mentioned earlier in the show, is pretty astounding. It's costing well over $250,000. There are better ways to fight residency. In fact, the governor, through regulation, has the ability to strengthen residency requirements, which is something that we all support. And Somos Un Pueblo Unido supports any anti-fraud mechanism.
Yeah, because there's been some of those examples in the news of fraud.
Sure. There is fraud in New Mexico, as there is fraud in every state. Most of the fraud that occurs in the United States actually occurs around driver's license and identity documents in states that don't give licenses to immigrants who are undocumented. And in fact, we can make the case that fraud proliferates in states that deny licenses because you, of course, create a black market for identity documents and for driver's licenses. And so we have a number of examples on our website of fraud rings that have been targeted by strong enforcement measures in other states. And so it's important for people to understand that fraud isn't going to go away by denying licenses. We support strong anti-fraud mechanisms, and we have been supporting that for a number of years, and many of those have already been put into place. But one of the things that the governor could have done was strengthen residency requirements through regulation, and she didn't. Instead, she created this illegal and very unfair, onerous, and costly program at taxpayers' expense to promote a political agenda that we know falls right in line with what's happening from Arizona to Alabama. And so we need to...
What is that? Tell us more about that political agenda. What's going on?
Well, obviously, there is a very anti... Right now, the immigrants' rights movement, our battle is in the states, right? Congress, of course, has failed to deal with this issue in a proper way.
Not again.
Within the last 5 to 10 years. Right. And so as long as we have Congress unwilling to deal with this issue, create policies that make sense for our economy, make sense for our government, make sense for law enforcement, that actually try to regularize the status of the 10 to 15 million immigrants who don't have a Social Security number and who need to be integrated into the larger community in this country. As long as they're failing to do that, we're going to have to be dealing with these policy issues at our local level. And so what our charge is in our states, and what our elected officials' charge should be, is to create reasonable policies, sensible policies that integrate immigrants rather than alienate them and promote public safety. And so when we passed this law in 2003, we didn't do it alone, Mary Charlotte. We worked with law enforcement officials, victims' rights agencies, community groups, faith groups. It was a very broad effort. And in part, we could find common ground on the licensing issue because we knew it would promote public safety, strengthen efforts to prevent DWIs and underage drinking, provide important tools to law enforcement, supporting officer safety, and of course benefiting the economy. And what we've seen since 2003 is that that's exactly what this policy has done.
How does it promote officer safety?
Well, it's really important for folks to be identified. And so on routine traffic stops, this is one of the reasons why we had such strong and have law enforcement support. It's because when you're a law enforcement official and you are on a routine traffic stop stopping someone, it's really important that they be able to identify themselves and that you can quickly, instead of sifting through foreign documents and foreign language, that you can quickly put that driver's license information. Because folks don't have a Social Security number, right? So they do have this license, which sort of provides information about their record, whether there are DWIs on their record, whether there's a warrant out for their arrest. These are the kinds of things that can quickly be ascertained by law enforcement because folks have a driver's license. At least that's what our law enforcement friends have been telling us.
So what are you looking at in the special session that starts today?
Well, we know that despite all of the problems, real problems and issues with our economy, with lack of jobs, with our educational system, with poverty in New Mexico, that that this is going to be an issue during our legislative session, and that this is certainly a wedge issue that the governor is going to keep pressing onto our communities. And so we know that there's going to be a repeal effort. She's made that very clear during this hopefully short special session on redistricting. And so what our task is to do is to keep obviously informing the public. We've just launched last week a website that's linked to our SomosUnPuebloUnido.org webpage or website that has fact sheets, information, all the latest news. We're going to be updating people as to where driver's license is going to be. So if you go to our website or if you go to SomosUnPuebloUnido.org/DL News, you can get that information, keep abreast of it. And we're going to also be having a big protest on September 8th, which is this Thursday, at noon in front of the roundhouse, basically just sort of pushing back and say, you know, ya basta, it's time to get back to work, to do what this state elected you to do, which is to basically improve the economy, improve education. There are a lot of other issues that are more important than this one that, again, only affects 5% of our driver's license holders in the state.
I was reading that polls do show that the majority of New Mexicans support the repeal of the driver's license law. What's your take on that?
Well, I actually haven't seen a number of polls that indicate that. I think that the only poll that was taken was last year by the Albuquerque Journal. And, I mean, polls are polls, and it showed that, I guess, 72%. That certainly gets repeated. But we've seen polls since that show that immigration is just is certainly not a priority for New Mexicans.
Yeah, it's funny. Polls, they'll ask for an opinion, but they won't ask for how much you actually care about that issue in the first place.
That's right. That's right. And, I mean, it's always in the questioning. I mean, everybody knows this about polls. But,
yeah.
You know, I think that if we stop thinking, I mean, there's obviously a lot of information about driver's licenses. And, I mean, there's advantage to being the governor and to controlling information at MVD, right? You release that information as you want. And, obviously, we think it's very skewed. But what we really try to help people understand is that having a driver's license, Mary Charlotte, isn't a privilege and it's not a right. It's an obligation. It's a legal obligation that states impose on its resident drivers so that the state can ensure that these folks, that all of us, know how to drive, have taken DWI prevention courses if we're under 25, have taken the written and road exams, the eye exams, register our vehicles, and have insurance and provide a record, a driving record, to MVD and law enforcement officials that are federal, local, and state. A lot of folks don't know that all this information that people have gone in, and it's not that they're volunteering to take this in, it is a legal requirement that all drivers in New Mexico get licensed and go through those rules, pay their traffic fines. Our community has stepped up to the plate and has shown since 2003 that we're willing to do that. And that, you know, I think that says something about immigrants in New Mexico who don't have Social Security numbers. These are families who live here, who take their kids to school, who are contributing to our economy. These are folks who need their licenses in part because they have families with U.S. citizen children who depend on them and depend on their ability to drive legally in this state.
It's hard for me to understand how, and it's been going on since the middle of the 18th century, but how anti-immigrant rhetoric is still able to take any hold, considering that everybody, including the governor of the state, except for Native American Indians, have parents, grandparents, or great-grandparents who were immigrants and who made this country what it is culturally and in every other way.
That's right. There was a great lemma in Spanish, sort of a motto that was used, I'm sure, over the course of many years, but in the early 90s when we saw Proposition 187 pass in California and other very sort of hateful, unconstitutional, and anti-immigrant policies pass at the state level back in the 90s. And it's aquí estamos y no nos vamos, right? We're here and we're not going anywhere. And,
right.
You know, you could see on bumper stickers, aquí estamos y no nos vamos. And we think about that a lot because we know that New Mexico has taken a different approach to immigration, and it's been a more sort of common sense approach, a more sensible approach, and certainly not a xenophobic, hateful, and extremist approach to immigrants, in contrast to some of the states around us like Colorado, Texas, and Arizona. But, you know, in the end, our families are here. They're going to continue to be here. We're organizing every day for a comprehensive immigration reform that's sensible. And in the meantime, it just makes sense to make sure that people who are following the rules, who are living in New Mexico, who are paying taxes, who are really contributing, which is most of us, most of our families, it just makes sense to provide policies that incorporate them as opposed to alienate them. That doesn't make sense for anyone. We take away driver's licenses for immigrants. It's not like immigrants are going to disappear from New Mexico.
Right.
And it's not like they're not going to drive. It just means that they're not going to be accountable to the same traffic laws and the same policies that the rest of us are accountable to. So that doesn't make any sense. And we're hoping that legislators can see that, can see past all of that terrible rhetoric and do the right thing.
Now, the last legislative session, that marathon 60-day session, it seemed to go on for 10 years, the Senate did pass a bill that was a compromise that addressed all the purported problems that the governor and those in support of her position were bringing up, namely the fraud.
But that's right. It was a very strong piece of legislation that that actually was worked on by both Republican senators and Democratic senators. And the Republicans didn't end up supporting it. And obviously the governor said no way. If it got to her desk, she'd veto it. And that, which most people don't know, would have strengthened residency requirements, although she can also do that through regulation. It would have created additional punitive measures for anyone involved in fraud or presenting fraudulent documents or selling fraudulent documents.
So strengthening residency requirements basically means bringing all your bills that go to your home address kind of thing?
Yes, and it all... No, and so in addition to some of the documents that are acceptable now through regulation, it would have created additional residency requirements. One, very important, proving residency for 6 months. As opposed to right now, the way that the policy is that, you know, for everybody across the board, you come in and you can prove that you live in the state today, you get a license. So for immigrants without social security numbers, you know, they'd have to prove residency for 6 months, which really isn't a problem for us because, of course, most of our families have been living here for, you know, 10, 15 years, 20 years.
Right.
And so that also more frequent renewals for immigrants and certainly... this idea that we need to create, you know, additional punitive measures via some additional felonies for folks involved in fraud. So it was a strong piece of legislation that the Senate passed and that most House members, that most Democrats in the House supported, but that wasn't supported at all by the governor. And so I think that if this really were about strengthening the integrity and security of our driver's license, then
that
bill would have been supported. It was really, it was a tough, and I mean, we weren't happy with all the provisions of it, but that's why it's compromise. And,
right.
And instead, the governor took an all or nothing approach and is continuing to take an all, and really kind of waste our time and taxpayers' money on this issue when it could have been taken care of 6 months ago. So that's where we're at.
Well, we've got just a moment left, but Somos Un Pueblo Unido has a wonderful website, which is somosunpueblounido.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you are also raising money to help with this campaign, and you're making it easy for people using text messaging.
That's right. You know, we as much as we'd love to be moving our state forward right now on a host of issues affecting our families, we are being forced to be in defense mode. And that, of course, takes resources. And so we encourage...
I would like to just say it. To amplify that a little bit, there are so many other more important immigrant issues.
That's right.
Than fighting constant battles about driver's licenses that you don't even get to deal with.
And immigrant issues are much like everyone else's issues. You know, last year we were working on protecting all workers, not just immigrants, from wage theft.
Right.
You know, helping pass a racial profiling law that would protect all people of color, all communities in New Mexico. And so immigrants are facing a lot of all of the same issues that other families are facing. I mean, we're not much different from the rest of you, right? And so I think that it's important for us to sort of put this behind us, keep moving our state forward. And one of the ways that people can support us, in addition to coming and protesting this kind of obsession with our community and this attack on our families, is coming to our event, our protest on September 8th, which is this Thursday at noon in front of the Roundhouse. We really need to show that New Mexico is better than this. And you can also support financially this campaign. And I can't stress enough how much we're spending just on this one policy alone, defending this one policy. You can text the word SOMOS to the number 84700 to pledge a donation of whatever it is that you want to pledge, and people will get back to you and help facilitate that. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible. Text the word SOMOS to 84700. That information is also on our website.
Marcela Diaz is the executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.